Howdy folks, this is Jimmy Akin, and I wanted to let you know about a special offer. When you become a patron of the Cordial Catholic Podcast at $8 or more a month, Keith will send you a copy of my new book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. To become a patron, just go to patreon.com/cordialcatholic.
Hi, hey, welcome to the Cordial Catholic. This is a podcast for non-Catholics, new Catholics, and those looking to dig deeper into the Catholic faith. I'm K. Albert Little. I'm an evangelical convert to Catholicism. And if there was one thing that I realized as I was looking into the Catholic faith, it was how little I knew about Catholicism. In fact, how little those Catholics around me knew about their own faith. It seemed like no one knew what was going on. This podcast is meant to fill in that gap. I bring you Catholic conversations from influential Catholic thinkers from the heart of the Catholic Church. No misinformation here. And this week's guest is absolutely no exception. I am excited, I am thrilled to bring you a conversation with Keith Nestor. Now, it's not just because we share the same first name. This guy is on fire. Keith is a former evangelical pastor who converted to the Catholic faith. He has an incredible story to tell, and I want to bring it to you. So sit back and listen and enjoy this conversation. Enjoy Keith's journey, because I think it sounds a lot like where a lot of people I knew and I know might be. This is a wonderful conversation. I think you'll love it. One quick word. You heard Jimmy there at the beginning of the show. If you want to support this show financially for $8 or more a month at patreon.com/cordialcatholic, I can send you a new copy of his book. Won't be a used copy. I can send you a copy of his new book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. This is a fantastic book about where the Bible came from a Catholic perspective. You will, I guarantee, learn something new. Whether you've studied the Bible for 20 years, or you are a brand new Catholic, or not a Catholic at all, this is a fantastic book to get your hands on. And I can send it to you for as little as $8 a month if you support this show. Hey, even $1 a month helps keep things going. This is not my full-time job, and any financial support is appreciated. It's at patreon.com/cordialcatholic if you believe in what we're doing here. Please help to support this show. Without any further ado, here's my fantastic conversation with Keith Nestor. You're going to love it. Please listen and enjoy. Welcome back to the Cordial Catholic. My guest this week is Keith Nestor. Keith is a former pastor with 20 years experience in full-time ministry. Keith has served in United Methodist churches, in Assemblies of God churches, and in Evangelical Free churches in a variety of roles. After a long discernment process, Keith resigned his job in full-time ministry and entered the Catholic Church in October 2018. He's written a book, The Convert's Guide to Roman Catholicism, Your First Year in the Church, which is coming out soon, and he's an absolute phenom on YouTube. He's exploded onto the scene with a number of videos answering questions and objections to his conversion to Roman Catholicism. Keith, I am so excited to welcome you onto the show and to chat with you today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. One thing I noticed in that intro was I came into the church in October 2017. I don't know if that makes a difference. Is that what my bio says? Is 2018?
That is what your bio says, but okay. I know it's a brand new website, man.
So yeah, I need to fix that.
No problem. So yeah, you're an old hat then in the church. An extra
sure,
year.
I mean, I've got like a special locker down in the Vatican where I can go and pick up my stuff, but. No, it's been almost 2 years now since I came into the church, but it doesn't seem like that long.
That's incredible. Well, you know what? I want to talk for a little bit here, and then I want to mostly get out of the way and ask you some questions along the way. But I want to tell you how I discovered you, because you could call it YouTube's algorithms, or you could call it, as I prefer to, the unfettered hand of God. Because what I was doing is I was watching some other YouTube videos, doing some research for some guests I was having on the show. And you know how YouTube autoplays the next video it thinks you might like. And so I'm sitting there on my chair taking some notes, and then this guy pops up and he's talking about his conversion story. And I am just enthralled and taken into the story almost immediately. And I thought, who is this guy? And how have I not heard of him before? He's fantastic. He was just speaking so well and so eloquently. And I feel like, you know, in this interview, and I should warn you now, Keith, I will be channeling a bit of my Pentecostal younger years, because I thought, this guy's got the anointing, as we used to say, when I heard you speak on YouTube. And I found you completely by accident. You were the next autoplay video. And I can't believe that I stumbled upon this amazing conversion story. And since then, we talked about maybe a month or so ago, and we arranged this interview. I feel like your YouTube channel is just taking off. There's so many comments, so many views, and I'm so excited to have you on the show, because this ministry that you've exploded onto the scene with is just fantastic. So thank you, first of all, thank you for your story and these videos you are creating.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Keith. It has been such an amazing thing that's happened. And really, it's only been in the last, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 weeks that people have been finding my videos. And I have no idea how that happened. I uploaded a video to YouTube, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 months ago, of a talk I gave at a church. And I didn't really think much of it. And I don't know, sometime around the first week of August, I started noticing I was getting all of these messages, and I'm like, what is happening? And I started to see my channel was like blowing up with different things. And I didn't do anything. You know, it was just sort of something that happened. So I'm so happy that you were able to find it, and others have too. And I'm having a lot of fun with it, but I'm also feeling, you know, a tremendous responsibility with it too, because so many people are sending me messages and wanting to interact. And I'm completely overwhelmed by that, because I want to be involved with that and I want to help everybody. But, you know, I work 2 full-time jobs. I'm trying to just do what I have to do. And I'm sure I miss things, but it's been pretty amazing.
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say that the Lord is doing some amazing things in your life to bring these people to you. You know, the funny thing is what that reminds me of when you say that you uploaded your video and didn't think anything of it. That reminds me of Scott Hahn, who I'm sure you're familiar with, because
for sure, yeah,
he gave this famous talk, this conversion talk, that I don't think he knew, if I remember correctly, I don't think he knew it was being recorded. And then, of course, that famous audio tape was just passed around to thousands and thousands of people who heard his conversion story and then were curious about the Catholic Church. So when you say you uploaded this video and had no idea the impact, that this is confirming for me that you are just being incredibly blessed by God, and there's something working behind the scenes here in your life and ministry.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, when I was preparing to become Catholic, you know, I had a few friends in the church that were always telling me things like, oh, if you became Catholic, you know, there'd be so many things for you to do in the church, and, you know, there would be opportunities for you to share and everything. Well, that was never anything that was on my radar as much as it was some of my friends. And so when I left the ministry and became a Catholic, I didn't have some grand plan where I'm like, okay, here's how I am going to enter into the Catholic ministry world or anything like that. It was the furthest thing from my mind. As a matter of fact, my priest said to me, he said, when you come into the church, I'm going to leave you alone for a year. I'm not going to ask you to do anything, you know, in ministry. Just be Catholic. And I really appreciated that, Keith, because I just needed time to breathe. You know, I needed time to experience what it was like to just go to church as a layperson and learn what it means to worship God as a Catholic, because it's a lot different, as you know. And then now, as like I've been given opportunities to speak a little bit and things have happened, like it's almost as if I'm feeling like, okay, God is saying, I'm not done with you yet. I've got a little more work for you to do in this type of arena.
Well, I got to say, from my perspective, hearing you talk, hearing how on fire you are for your faith and the way you speak and the way, like I said, I'm getting Pentecostal, but man, I feel like this guy's got the anointing. I really feel it.
Oh, man. I love it. I spent a little bit of time in a Pentecostal church and I can relate to that kind of speech,
Amen. Well, hey, I want to get a bit out of the way here, and I want you to take us back as far back as you think you want to go and tell us your conversion story. And I want to preface it with this, and I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but when I heard you speak on YouTube, I thought, this guy reminds me so much of so many youth pastors and evangelical pastors that I've known. There's just something about how on fire you were, how enthusiastic you were, how relatable you were. And when I saw you speak, I thought, I gotta talk to this guy, because I feel like what's happening when you tell your story is that you are so many pastors I've known in the evangelical world telling your story. So I feel like there's just so much to relate to. And I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but, you know, the youth pastors, the evangelical pastors that I knew, and I know that you spent some time working with youth, just had this kind of absolute fire, like in the way they spoke, in the way they acted, the way they lived, and that would draw in so many people, right? And so when I heard you speak, I picked up on that same kind of enthusiasm, but you're bringing that enthusiasm into the story of your Catholic conversion. So I think, and I've been pumping this up for my audience, I think there's so much here to relate to. So I really just want to kind of sit back and hear you unpack your story.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. One comment that I did receive on a YouTube video one time, someone said to me, basically, I'll paraphrase it, you don't speak like a Catholic. You need to tone it down because you still talk like a Protestant. I kind of took that as a compliment in a weird way. I have a lot of experience in churches and, you know, sitting underneath preachers and listening to sermons. And I have a lot of friends that are, you know, preachers and stuff too. And sometimes there can be this thing that happens to you when it's time to preach where you sort of go into preacher mode. And, you know, if you ever meet a preacher who talks a certain way, acts a certain way, that's completely different from when he's up giving a sermon, you know what I mean? How it's like there can be this transformation that takes place. And I think for me, it's just who I am. You know, I don't try to get into some kind of weird thing. I'm just kind of an intense person. I don't know. I have a lot of that going on sometimes. And when I get fired up about things, I come across that way. And of course, the thing I'm most fired up is Jesus. You know, I'm fired up most about Jesus and my Catholic faith. So I'll kind of back this up a little bit to talk about my conversion story. And it really begins with just a little background about how I grew up. So my father is a retired United Methodist pastor. So I grew up going to church. You know, I had a pretty uneventful, upbringing in the sense that, you know, both my parents loved God. They brought me to church. And, you know, I really don't remember a time when I didn't consider myself a Christian or a believer in Jesus. But I went to church camp when I was probably 10 or 11 years old. And there was an opportunity to give your life to Jesus. And so I prayed that prayer, went down front and gave my heart to Jesus and tried to live as a Christian from there on out. But, you know, my faith was something that was a personal thing. And, you know, I would say through my teen years, I wasn't very vocal about my faith, although I really considered myself to be a strong Christian. But for me, church attendance was pretty nominal, which is weird since I was the pastor's kid. But I barely went to church really once I got to be the age where my parents quit making me go. So I would bounce around a little bit, you know, sometimes go to different youth groups. And I found myself in some Assemblies of God youth groups and some different evangelical places, because really what I was craving was a relationship with Jesus that was exciting and that was impactful. And I loved music. So music was a huge part of my life. And, you know, I wanted to marry those two things together. So when I was growing up, you know, I was a metalhead. I loved that kind of stuff. And I was a drummer. So I was, you know, really, really into that kind of thing and trying to find a way to, you know, use my musical gifts and aspirations for ministry. But when that wasn't working out so well, you know, I just kind of went more the way of trying to play drums all the time. So after I went to college and dropped out after 1 year to move out to Las Vegas to play in a band with some friends of mine from my school. And that sort of fell apart rather quickly. And I wound up back in Iowa and, you know, we started a Christian band with some guys and we're doing that thing. And then I got an opportunity to audition for a band in Philadelphia that was not a Christian band at all, but was a fantastic band. And I, you know, dropped out of school again and went out to Philadelphia. I think I was 19 years old. And while I was in Philly playing drums in this band, I started going to this church. It was a Calvary Chapel church. Have you ever heard of Calvary Chapel, Keith?
Yeah, heard of that for sure.
Well, when I went to when I finally found Calvary Chapel, I was like, I am home. This is my jam. This was a church that it had, you know, contemporary worship, a fantastic Bible teacher, and just a lot of energy. And it was really exciting. And it was through Calvary Chapel where I really fell in love with reading the Bible and studying the scriptures. And I loved their long expositional verse by verse sermons, you know, and I just couldn't get enough of it. So I was sort of living this weird life where I would go play in these bars and stuff and do the music thing. But then every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night, I'm at Calvary and worshiping God. Well, at one point in time, our pastor gave a sermon about Abraham and Isaac, and he talked about the sacrifice that God calls Abraham to make, you know, his only son Isaac. And he just sort of laid that out there, and I was just gutted. And I felt like, as he said, anyone here who feels like you have an Isaac in your life that's more important to you than God, you know, God's calling you to give that up. Will you do it? And I knew for me that this was going to be all about my music. So I remember praying that prayer, God, if you want me to do something else with my life, I'll do it, but I don't know what it is. Well, it was a couple of days later, I got a voicemail on my answering machine. And it was a pastor friend of mine from Iowa who I went to church camp with when I was growing up in church camp. And he says, hey, Keith, I want to talk to you about becoming a youth pastor. And I was like, a youth pastor? What's that? Okay, so our church didn't even have a youth pastor, so I didn't even really know that was a job. So when he, you know, called me to come do that, I reluctantly agreed because I felt like it was the Lord, you know, calling my bluff. And I ended up interviewing for this job, and long story short, they offered me the job, and I went back to Philly. I quit the band. I said goodbye to this girl that I was kind of interested in, or not kind of, I was very interested in, and I, you know, became a youth pastor. When I showed up at the youth ministry, I really didn't have any idea what I was doing. I was a college dropout, no education, no experience, no nothing, and I just sort of lived into what that would look like. And thankfully, they were patient with me, and our little youth group at this little Methodist church, had about 12 kids in it. And I just did the best I could. Well, eventually, one part of the story that I need to tell you is, you know, that girl I was interested in Philadelphia, I convinced her to move to Iowa. I told her it was going to be a great move for her. So she moved out to Iowa, moved in with our pastor and his family. And we ended up getting married about a year later. So that's my wife, Estelle. We got married and we started a family not long after that, about a year after we got married. And our little youth group, I was going back to college, getting my degree. I finished up my degree and was doing the youth pastor thing. And our little youth group started to grow. It was pretty cool. And within a couple years, this little group of 12 kids blew up to around 250 to 300 kids every Wednesday night. And it was awesome, Keith. We had a band that we started, and we recorded a worship CD, and things were going great. Well, during this whole entire time, my view of Roman Catholicism was really to not have a view of Roman Catholicism. It wasn't anywhere on my radar. I knew basically no one really who was a Catholic. I'd never met any Catholics that were on fire for their faith. I mean, I knew people that were, you know, Catholic, but none of my faith relationships involved anybody that had anything to do with Catholicism. So my view of Catholicism was that it was just this kind of crusty, old, stale religion filled with, you know, man-made traditions. And the only information doctrinally I knew about Catholicism had come from, you know, your typical anti-Catholic sources in Protestantism. You know, people who would say things like, well, the Catholic Church is evil, the Pope's the Antichrist, they worship Mary, they bow down to statues, that sort of thing. So when I was trying to find a graphic designer to help me with a logo for my youth ministry, I ran across this guy. His name is Devin Schott, and his number was given to me. So I called him up and talked to him on the phone, and he sounded like a pretty cool guy. And he agreed to meet with me. So I went over to his house. And when I was walking up to his house, I was like, you know, on the phone, I could tell he was about my age. He seemed like he had a lot of energy and was excited about ministry. So I thought, okay, this guy, maybe I can have him become one of my youth volunteers. Well, but I knew nothing about his church experience. So I'm walking up to his house, and he's got all these statues in his front yard, you know, the Virgin Mary and, you know, some other guy, maybe it was Francis of Assisi or what. I mean, something, I had no idea who these people were. And I knock on his door, and he opens the door, lets me into his house. And literally the inside of his house looks like the Sistine Chapel. I mean, it was beautiful. And there's this bowl of water by the door. There's statues in there. There's all these Catholic looking people in these pictures everywhere. And I walked, and there's no television in his house. You know, at my house, I had like a big TV. Well, at the time, you know, what I consider to be a big TV, video game consoles, you know, all that normal man stuff or whatever. He didn't have any of that going on. We sit down at his dining room table. I'm looking around his house, and I was like, what did I get myself into? Well, he opens up this folder with some ideas for logos for my youth ministry. And I could tell this guy was super talented. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So as we're talking a little bit, I'm just intrigued by this guy, because he seems to talk to me like he has this vibrant faith. And I just couldn't connect these two things, Keith, you know, this vibrant faith with all of this Catholic stuff. So I remember just sort of stopping the conversation and asking him, I said, Devin, I have a question for you. You know, when were you saved? And we stopped, and he looked at me, and he just kind of laughed a little bit. And he's like, okay. Now, I needed to ask that question because I wanted to see how a Catholic would answer that question. Because all the Catholics that I knew, you know, didn't talk like that, right? So this guy seemed different. So what's he going to say? Is he going to give me some weird answer or what? And what he did was he began to tell me about his relationship with Jesus and about how, you know, Jesus saved him from his sins. And he kind of sounded like, you know, every other Christian that I knew from that perspective. But he talked a lot about the sacraments, and he talked a lot about, you know, the saints and his relationship with the Eucharist and the church. I didn't even know what that meant, you know, and it blew me away. Well, as we began to talk, he started asking me questions a little bit about my faith and different things. And of course, I kept thinking to myself, well, all right, I'm gonna save this guy from Catholicism. You know, if he really loves Jesus, then this will be a pretty much a slam dunk, right? I'll show him some verses. You know, call no man father. I'll talk about, you know, how, you know, we're saved by faith alone, right? Because I was still thinking that's what the Bible said, and all these different things that, you know, a lot of us Protestants at the time think we can just easily debunk the faith of Catholics. Well, I quickly learned I was out of my league when it came to this, and we started talking a little bit. And as I was getting ready to leave, he hands me this tape, this VHS tape, and it has this really grainy picture on it of some guy that looks like my dad shaking hands with the Pope. and it says the Scott Hahn conversion story. So, you know, you brought up Scott Hahn earlier.
Perfect.
And I'm like, who in the world is Scott Hahn? And why is he shaking hands with the Pope? I knew nothing about it. So I go home and eventually I watched this tape because I was so intrigued. And I mean, let's be real. The quality of the production of the Scott Hahn conversion story is less than stellar. But I mean, there was no cool graphics, no background music. It was pretty rough. But the things he was saying, I was completely enraptured with it, Keith, because here was a guy who wasn't just, you know, like me, who didn't really know much about Catholicism, so I just sort of believed what everybody told me. This guy was like super anti-Catholic, and he winds up becoming a Catholic, and that just hit me. Well, our conversation, you know, continued from there, and, you know, as we began to try to argue each other out of our systems, you know, I'm like trying to get Devin to become a Protestant. He's trying to get me to become a Catholic. We would have like these knockdown, drag out theological, you know, throwdowns. And it was pretty intense. And what I was learning was that a lot of the things that I had taken for granted about Catholicism just weren't true. And he began to give me books, you know, Born Fundamentalist, Born Again Catholic, The Spirit of Catholicism. He would take me to go hear different speakers. So I remember, you know, years and years ago going to see Tim Staples give a talk at a Catholic church and other people. And my heart was starting to be changed on some of this stuff. But I still had, you know, a lot of objections, a lot of things I couldn't wrap my mind around, and things that I thought for me just were deal breakers, you know. And There were a few of those things in my story that caused me at one point in time just to sort of shut this whole thing down, because although I was beginning to feel drawn into the Eucharist and some of the things with the church fathers, there were still a few things that for me I just couldn't get over. So first of all, you know, practically, I was a youth pastor. You know, I was doing ministry, and if I become a Catholic, what am I supposed to do for a job? And my ministry was huge at the time, you know, to me anyway. And I thought, well, clearly God desires me to be doing what I'm doing. All these kids are coming every week, and it's a great thing, and it's all exciting. I'm not just going to drop all that to, you know, become a Roman Catholic. And so I remember I had an experience one night where I was at a church camp, and we were having a communion service. And when my friend, who was the pastor, was doing the, you know, the Protestant version of the Eucharistic liturgy, which can vary from place to place and time to time. But when he held up the bread and the juice, something inside me broke. And I just knew that, like, okay, Jesus Christ is truly present in the Eucharist, but that's in the Catholic Church. You know, it's not a symbol. It's reality. And I remember running out of there just in tears, calling Devin, saying, I think I'm supposed to become Catholic. And I thought for sure he'd be like, oh, yes, ha ha, you know, finally you listened to me. But he was so humble about it. And he was like, yeah, you know, the Lord's calling you home. Well, it would have been awesome if that night I would have said, okay, I'm doing this. But the truth is I didn't. I was afraid. And I chickened out. I told nobody about this, not even my wife. And I just kind of put it on a shelf and went on with my life and, you know, ran into some tough times over the years, and some tough things happened to me and in my heart, and I got kind of burned out with ministry, and I just needed to step away. And throughout that process, I sort of eventually got to a place where I was willing to consider Catholicism again. But as I began to you know, go down that road, I still couldn't wrap my mind around a few of these objections, you know, specifically around things like purgatory and some of the Marian doctrines and the papacy. I struggled with these things. Well, a couple years go by, and I'm back involved in ministry and doing different things. Now, you know, I'm a senior pastor in a church, in an E-free church, and then I'm also doing like a teaching ministry at this Assemblies of God church. And you know, life is good. I'm still moving forward in my faith and in ministry, but there's this nagging thing about, you know, Catholicism. Well, about a couple years later, I went back into the Methodist church as basically an associate pastor of youth and mission, which, meant that I was in charge of youth ministry again, mission teams, but I was also, you know, preaching every other week to the main worship service of the church. And, you know, doing ministry again in that role it was pretty cool. But our denomination was really going through some difficult things. And I began to see how, you know, the lack of an authority beyond any one person's interpretation of the scripture led to all sorts of chaos. And I started having all these flashbacks about when I was going through my exploration of Catholicism. You know, I remember when I was in seminary, pulling my church history teacher aside or my New Testament professor aside and wanting to ask her about Matthew 16:18, where Jesus, you know, gives Peter, you know, I tell you, you are Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. That entire discourse. And I remember asking her, what do we do with this? You know, the Catholics are saying that this is where Peter is made the first pope and the authority is given to him or will be given to him to establish the church or have Christ establish the church on him. And I said, what do we do with that? You know, this is what the Catholics are teaching. What do we say? And she says, well, we believe that it's not about Jesus, it's about his faith. And I said, well, why do we think that way? And she goes, well, because we're Protestants, of course. Ha, 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 ha. And you know, she walked away, and I'm like, oh, man, that was not a good answer to that question. Because we're Protestants. That didn't help me. Well, I found myself in almost an identical situation, Keith. I was attending a meeting, and there was a guy there who's like I think he's a president of a Methodist school or something like that, of a seminary. And I was having lunch with him, and we were discussing all of the issues in our denomination that is basically breaking apart the Methodist Church. And I said to him, I said, you know, how do we answer these questions? You know, you've got some guys that are, you know, claiming that, you know, their point of view is correct, and other people claiming their point of view is correct. How are we going to find our way through this without some authority that we can all mutually agree upon? And you know what he said to me? He goes, yeah, it sucks to be Protestant, doesn't it? Ha, 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 ha. And, you know, he thought he was making a joke. And I was just like, oh, man. And it just hit me again. Well, oh, man, there's so many things I could tell you. But bottom line is this. Through the chaos that was happening around me in my denomination, it really caused me to reopen this exploration of Catholicism. And I started to really key in on this idea of authority and understanding how important that is. And when I began to really feel the need to find that authority and understand what the church fathers talked about and what they taught about it and how, you know, in Catholicism, it just seemed to me to make sense. Because what I was struggling with was I think there's two ways to look at how the role of churches, you know, and with relation to the gospel. And one way, and this is the way I was used to thinking, was that it was our job as Christians and as the church to take the gospel message and basically find a way to repackage that to our culture and to our world in a way that they could make sense of and that was easy to understand and that would draw them into relationship with Christ. You know, that's basically how I functioned. But then I came face to face with another way of interacting with the gospel, and that was to not be thinking about how we can repackage the gospel, but rather how we can remain faithful to it and preserve and defend it, you know, as the scriptures talk about, you know, the faith that was entrusted to us. I think the book of Jude talks about that. And we pass that down. We're going to protect that and keep that when safeguarding. Because what I began to see around me were, you know, shepherds of my church, you know, that were just completely selling out to the culture and not standing guard for the sheep and not defending the faith and not protecting their flocks from error and you know, problems, but rather they were just sort of going with the flow. And then when I started to think about Catholicism and look at how, you know, the goal of the teaching magisterium of the church is not to reinterpret the faith, but rather to preserve it and defend it and protect it, that just resonated with me. And as this was happening, you know, I'm really feeling this pull. So I remember one day I pulled you know, our senior pastor aside one day, and we were preparing to we were making some revisions to a sermon series. We were having a meeting, and I said, "Listen, I got to tell you something. I think I know what I need to do to deal with all these problems in our denomination for me, because it was really driving me nuts." He says, "Well, what's that, Keith?" I said, I think God's calling me to become a Roman Catholic." And he looks at me, he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I feel like Roman Catholicism provides the best way to deal with these issues, because it provides, you know, this authority outside of just our own opinions about what the Bible believes or teaches." So he looks at me and he goes, "Okay, Keith, here's what I need you to do. I want you to write and preach a sermon series on the origin and formation of the Christian church, and then preach that to our congregation." And I was like, "What? I'm not so sure you want me to do that. You know, some of the things I'm learning and feeling and believing, they might go against what, you know, you guys might want." And he said to me, he said, "Well, if that's the truth, don't you think you should tell everybody that?" Whoa. And I was like, "Okay, game on," you know. So I remember preaching a sermon about Matthew 16 to our Methodist church about this authority that Jesus gives to Peter and his successors, you know. I preached a little bit later in the year a sermon on the Blessed Mother and on what happened when the angel Gabriel came to her and gave her the news that she would become the mother of God. And while I was preparing that message, I had this intense emotional experience around the Blessed Mother. And, you know, because that was one of my main objections, was all of the stuff that had to do with Mary. But as I was writing that sermon, I like started to cry. It would be so weird. I'd be in my office reading through scriptures about Mary and about this interaction that she has with the angel Gabriel and what happens when she goes to see Elizabeth. And I was overcome with emotion, you know. And a friend of mine, a Catholic friend of mine, came to see me one day, and he's sitting in my office. And I told him, I said, "I don't know what's going on, but I think I'm like becoming attached to the Virgin Mary in some weird way. What do you make of that?" And he just started bawling, you know. And it was kind of like we were both these grown men sitting in this office. Neither one of us like to cry or get emotional. We're both in there crying. And he's like, "I don't do this. I don't do that." And I'm like, "Me neither." Oh, you know. But there was something drawing me to her, you know. And it was all of these things happening in parallel, you know. And it was just more than I could deal with. Well, you know, to kind of cut this short, because I know you probably have a lot of questions. There was a day where I was really torn up about what I was going to do. I had been meeting with a priest here in my hometown just to kind of, you know, open that conversation. I remember sitting with him once saying, "Well, I really need just time and I need to pray about this." And he looked at me, he said, "No, Keith, you really don't need to pray." And I don't think he meant it like I don't need to pray, but he was like, "What you need to do is you need to make a decision. What are you going to do? Clearly God's revealing this to you. But what are you going to do?" Well, the truth is I was terrified because, you know, I got three kids, I've got a wife, I've got a mortgage, you know, I've got a career. I'm 20 years into the ministry at this point in time. I have no other discernible skills really, you know, what am I going to do? And it was tough. Well, so I'm meeting with this priest, we're talking more about things. I'm feeling more and more called to do this. And I'm having a moment in my devotions in the morning where I'm praying, and I felt like the Lord, you know, here we are going Pentecostal again, right? The Lord spoke to my heart, brother. And he put this on my heart. He said, "You need to get a hold of this guy named Steve Ray." Okay. Now I know, you know, Steve Ray, I've listened to his podcast or your podcast with him on there. But at the time, Steve Ray was just another guy that I'd seen a talk from on YouTube once in a while or whatever, heard a little bit about him, but you know, he's one of many. And I thought, okay, well, I don't know how to do that. What does that even mean? You know, I don't know. But I just felt like, okay, I need to learn more about Steve Ray. Well, that day I was scheduled to have dinner with a friend of mine, a Catholic friend of mine, and, you know, the same guy who was crying with me in my office that one day. And we were going to meet at like 4 o'clock and have dinner. And I'm like, who eats at 4 o'clock? You know, my grandparents maybe. But I drive down to Iowa City and we go into this restaurant, and he comes in and we sit down, and before he even says anything, he sits down and his wife texts him, and he says, "Hold on, Keith." And he opens his phone, And it says on the text message, wife says, hey, tell Keith that Steve Ray is going to be in, you know, like Galva, Illinois or something this night, you know, and maybe you guys should go. And he looks at me and I just was like, what? You're kidding me. And then I told him about what happened that morning. And he's like, well, we're going. So I called my wife. I said, hey, I got to go to this thing tonight. I'll be home late. She's like, okay. So we drive all the way to Illinois, you know, or I can't remember the exact town. It was in Milan or something like that, but it was probably an hour away from where we were. And when we got there, they were having mass before his talk. And I was so torn up, Keith. You know, I was just like, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, my family was going through a hard time. My mom had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, you know, maybe a year before this, and she wasn't doing so great. We were all hurting and struggling, and there was all this uncertainty around us. And I remember having a conversation with my dad, whom I love and respect greatly. And I told him, I said, I'm feeling the pull to Roman Catholicism. And I think I'm going to become Catholic. And he just said, Keith, what, you know, you can't just quit your job and become Catholic. There's got to be a way. You've got to have some way to, you know, earn a living or do something. There's got to be a way. And I'm like, okay, so I'm feeling all these things. We go into this, so, you know, we're going into this mass and I can't receive the Eucharist. I'm not Catholic, but I go up front and I get my little blessing and kneel down in front of this crucifix. And I am just broken. I'm calling out to God. I'm saying, God, if you want me to become Catholic, I will do it. But you've got to make a way. You know, there's got to be a way. I just can't quit my job and do this. I mean, what am I supposed to do? You got to make a way. And again, you know, for the second time in one day, God spoke to me. And it was like Jesus was reaching out to me from that crucifix. And he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but through me. Keith, you don't need me to make a way. You just need me. And man, it just floored me because I realized that I had been doing the exact same thing I had been preaching against for most of my ministry, which was putting conditions on my obedience to Jesus. You know, I used to tell people all the time, You got to just obey God. You can't tell God, I'll obey you only if ... But yet here I was believing in all my heart that God was calling me to become Catholic, but saying to God, I will do it, but ... You got to make a way, which really meant you got to make it easy. And it also meant, you know, I don't have to suffer and I don't lose anything and all of those things. Well, I went and sat down and listened to Steve's talk. And he gave a talk about what the early Christians suffered and died for when it came to their faith and how they were unwilling to compromise their faith, even if it cost them their very lives. And as I was sitting there, it all clicked for me. And I realized that, you know, the way that God was making for me wasn't about my safety and security. It was about complete obedience in union with him and his church, no matter what. And after that talk was over, my friend Greg grabs me, says, hey, we're going to talk to Steve Ray. And I'm not usually the guy that, you know, goes up and talks to the guys after their talks. I'm like, okay, they're probably busy. And there's all these other people gathered around him to talk and, you know, whatever. So I remember Greg just grabbed me, pulls me up, and there's these ladies up there with pictures of their kids showing, oh, Steve, this is my grandson, Joe, you know, and all, you know, what. And Greg just is kind of like, we go up there and he says, Steve, I need to introduce you to my friend Keith. He's a Methodist pastor and a youth pastor, and he's feeling the call to become Catholic. And Steve looks at me and he goes, oh man, he goes, I know where you are. And he goes, let me give you one piece of advice. You either need to become Catholic right now, or you need to turn around and run the other way and never look back. Don't read the church fathers. Don't pray the rosary. Don't even think about it, because you are stuck in no man's land right now, and it'll drive you crazy. And then he hands me a copy of his book, Upon This Rock. My friend Greg says, Steve, would you write your phone number in there? Which I thought was pretty hilarious. He actually did, gave me the book. On the way home, I looked at my friend and I said, that's it. I'm doing this. I'm going to become Catholic. Went home, told my wife, and she said, okay, Keith, if this is what you feel like God's calling us to do, then we will do this. Now, what I haven't told your listeners is that my wife was raised Catholic. She was brought up in the church, but not really in a way that had anything to do with the vibrant faith. She just was Catholic because that's just what you were. You know, she went to Catholic school her whole life, but she would tell you it never meant anything to her. They didn't go to church other than Christmas or Easter, and her entire time through Catholic high school, she never felt like she understood the gospel or anything. It wasn't until I invited her to Calvary Chapel where she got saved, because I told her, you know, you got to get rid of this Catholic mumbo jumbo. Get rid of it. It's just baggage holding you down. You need the real faith. You need Jesus. And so as the guy who took her out of the church and then 20 years in ministry, now I'm the one going to her saying, we got to become Catholic. Imagine how that went over, you know. But she said to me, you know, she said, okay, if this is what God's calling us to do, then we're going to do it. So I think, I don't know, it was probably the next day I went into my senior pastor's office and I said, here's the deal. I'm doing this. And I went before the church board and I told them, and they couldn't believe it. I mean, our church was growing. We had a $9 million building on the edge of town we were putting together, and things were exciting. It was happening. I mean, our denomination was a mess, but our local church was doing great. And they're like, Keith, what are you talking about? You know, we love you. And I loved my church. I had a great relationship with these people, but I told them, I said, no, I got to follow what the Lord's calling me to do. So, you know, I resigned my job, you know, not long after that, and came into the Catholic Church. You know, my wife and I had to get married in the church because, you know, we hadn't done that. We got married outside the Catholic Church when we first got married. And of course that was one of my hangups back in the day, but you know, we were ready to jump in. So we did that. And October 8th in 2017, I was brought into the church, and when it was time for me to receive the Eucharist, it was an amazing experience. And then not long after that, it was time to pass the peace, you know, and, you know, turn and share the peace of Christ, you know, give each other a sign of peace. I feel a tap on my shoulder. I turn around and Steve Ray's standing there, and he taps me on the shoulder and he says, welcome home, brother. You'll never look back. Now, Steve Ray doesn't live in my town, but he just happened to be in our town on that day and happened to be at that mass when that happened. And it just was like, boom, full circle, you know? So my wife and I, we've been living this life, you know, since that moment. You know, it's been an amazing experience, and God has shown me so many things, but, you know, that's how I came into the church. That's a long story right there, brother. You know, I feel like I've done a lot of talking. So.
Oh man, we'd say that's a good word. That's what we'd say about that. That's a fantastic, that's a good word, man. That's just a fantastic story. I mean, I'd wonder, first of all, and this was a hang up for me too, because the Catholics that I knew as an evangelical were these Catholics like you describe your wife may have been, like raised in Catholic school, but it wasn't any kind of a vibrant faith. And when I was an evangelical, when I was going to church, we'd have these Bible studies, and before that, you know, youth groups, and then, you know, midweek services, and all these things that places we could grow and worship and fellowship. And the Catholics that I knew had none of that stuff. I wouldn't even consider them Christians, I don't think, at the time, just based on seeing how they acted and their faith. So how for you was that experience? You know, how did you feel when you were looking at coming into a church where so many Catholics appeared to be like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there were basically two types of Catholic people that I had experience with. And the first and largest group was exactly what you described. People who were, you know, Catholic, just kind of like people are German or Irish, you know, it's part of their heritage. But it had really no impact on their, you know, desire to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. Well, then the other group of people that I had a little bit less experience with were Catholics that I judged to be kind of fanatical, you know, and like superstitious. And I, you know, I would see Catholics bowing down before statues and rubbing their rosary beads and saying just weird things that freaked me out. Like, oh man, I can't find my keys. Well, pray to St. Anthony, you know, and these things that to me, listening at the time, I couldn't relate to. So it was difficult for me to think about going into that. But once I started to meet some Catholics that were super on fire for their faith, that changed me, you know. And I, you know, back in the day, way back early in my experience, I did a thing where I was invited to go over to Medjugorje, you know, and I know that's a controversial topic for a lot of people, because some people are, you know, convinced that Medjugorje is like heaven on earth, and other people think that it's, you know, a complete hoax and all this kind of stuff. And I'm not here to get into all that, but I was invited to go when I was a Protestant with a bunch of Catholics. So I went on that trip, and you know, the thing that I saw while I was over there was I didn't see any nominal Catholics over there. I can tell you that much. I saw people who were praying with passion and worshiping Jesus and just wanted to be in the presence of God and living their faith boldly. But yet at the same time, they were loving life. You know, they were happy, and they lived their faith in community in a way that I hadn't ever experienced in Catholic circles, you know? So my generalized view of Catholics sort of changed after that experience. But yeah, I mean, thinking about coming into the church, it's different, you know. Going to mass is different than going to church at other places. But I think the thing that's helped me with that has been to really not get focused on what other people are doing, but rather be focused on what God's doing and the sacraments and the liturgy. Because, you know, let's face it, not all Catholic churches are awesome to go to. Some of them are amazing. Like the one I go to is fantastic. But, you know, I've been to some Catholic churches that have really, you know, been a struggle for me for one reason or another. But what I've appreciated is even on the, you know, the most challenging Sundays for me, I've always received the Eucharist and I've always partaken in the liturgy. And I find that if you get too focused on what other people are doing around you, then that's always going to trip you up. So yeah, I struggled with it, but I've tried to learn that, you know, in Catholicism, really who you are as a churchgoer isn't the point of going to mass. Whereas a lot of times when you're going to other churches, it's all about who else is there. You know, especially in youth groups, it was all like, well, who's going to go? And how do you get more kids to show up so that you can get more kids? And in, you know, my former life, it was all about how do we draw a crowd? Because a crowd will bring more people, you know, and how do we make the worship service easy for people to interact with and friendly and open and inviting to non-churched people, you know? Well, mass is a lot different than that. And it took me a little while to understand and embrace that different frame of mind. But now that I do, it's amazing, because it's so refreshing not to have to worry about yourself, you know, or who's around you, but just to focus on Jesus.
Oh, that's a great perspective to have. I know that, you know, mass just looks so different than I think a lot of the Protestant services that you and I would have been in as non-Catholic Protestants, right? I would have had at least a lot of, you know, the really rocking music, and I know music is important for you, so losing that might have been a thing, and we would have had you know, spotlights and all these. I'm thinking of the typical kind of evangelical Protestant Sunday morning service. It's a production, and the mass is so different from that. So how did you cope with that transition?
Well, yeah, first of all, let me tell you, all that you know, rock and worship music experience, like, that was my jam. I mean, I lived for that. I was a worship leader and I was also a drummer. I designed, you know, sound systems and stage sets and lighting and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it was like, if you came to one of my youth services or one of the worship services I designed, it was intense. I mean, we used to have like pyrotechnics going off in our youth nights and stuff. And I mean, I was all into that, you know? So then going into mass, I thought, well, okay, I have to learn to just let that go. And I was willing to do that. But then I would go to mass sometimes. And if I just be completely honest, you know, sometimes the music was a struggle for me because I didn't really appreciate it. You know, I'm not really a big 1970s, 80s, happy, clappy, modern hymn guy. I'm not into that so much. So I kind of endure that or put up with that. No offense to people who are into that. I really don't want to come across as like one of these guys that's like, you know, judgy or some kind of purist, but it just wasn't fulfilling to me. Well, one Sunday, because of time constraints, we had to go to Mass at a different time. And the only time that was available was our 7 a.m. Latin Mass, okay? Which our church has a Latin Mass. It's the only one in our diocese, okay? But I didn't know anything about the Latin Mass at the time. I just thought, okay, well, this is interesting. I didn't know how special it was or that it was the only one or whatever. I just knew it was at 7 o'clock in the morning and it counted. So, you know, we're going to Latin Mass. So we go into this church and I'm immediately taken aback by just this sense of reverence there. And, you know, most of the women are veiled and it's quiet and people are praying. So we come in there and we kneel down to pray. And I'm just thinking to myself, I know I'm going to be stick out like a sore thumb because I knew the Latin Mass from what I'd heard of it was a lot of calisthenics, you know, up and down. And I was like, all right, I just hope I don't look like an idiot. Well, then all of a sudden, the Motet choir starts chanting. And it just knocked me and my wife off our socks. I was completely blown away by this music. And the entire Mass just captured my heart. And I just, right away, like the first week, I fell in love with that. And what I discovered was that for me, I didn't miss the rock and roll worship anymore. I craved like this chanted worship, oftentimes in Latin, and that whole experience. And now, like when I'm sitting working on, you know, stuff at my studio or doing different things, I have a video playing on YouTube or whatever. Most of the time, it's like the Latin chant rosary, you know, Gregorian chant or something like that. So for me, God didn't just, it wasn't like this was taken away from me and I sit back and cry about it. He gave me something even better. So I'm a huge lover of that type of worship now, way more than I am of, you know, the rock and music. I still like contemporary worship music. I like all that. I'll listen to it, you know. But, you know, for my money, I would take a Gregorian chant Mass any day of the week over like a rock and roll worship concert. It's been awesome.
That's really interesting. I know music is definitely a thing that was a struggle for me and my wife as well. We came from a non-denominational church. It was the last place that we called home, and they had essentially a house band that would record albums and stuff.
Wow!
You know, and it's a bit of a challenge making that transition sometimes, but you've given us some fantastic, I mean, pointers. I mean, worry about yourself. It is about us. It's not about, you know, everyone around us, and necessarily if we're being moved emotionally by the music. It's not necessarily about that kind of an experience. And
you got it. Yeah.
I said at the top of the show that you remind me of so many youth pastors and young pastors that I've known. And something that I often wrestle with, because my wife and I are both converts, and the Catholic faith to us, and I know to you and your wife, is this fantastic, enormous, incredible thing that I wish everyone could understand. Because I feel like if everyone could understand that, they'd become Catholic in an instant. And I feel like you're in a great position to definitely help people to understand and to appreciate the Catholic faith. The way you speak is just fantastic. You have a great perspective. So I wonder what you would say. And of course, this is the other rub. We can't ourselves move anyone towards the Catholic faith. It's God that has to draw people in. So, you know, our words, you and I, ultimately, it's not going to be our own words alone that will affect anybody. But what would you say to somebody who is in a place that you were in, maybe when this journey started? What would you say to maybe put a pebble in their shoe to get them thinking about Catholicism?
I think the biggest thing I would say is, you know, if I'm going to use words, because, you know, first and foremost, I think that the best way to show somebody the truth of the Catholic faith is to live your faith in a vibrant way that makes you more holy and more Christ-like, and it enhances your faith in a way that will cause them to say, wow, you know, something's different about you. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't share what's happening. Obviously, you do. So for me, when people want to talk to me about it, I usually listen to what their hangups are. And I want to hear from them, you know, what are you struggling with? What about Catholicism are you struggling with? But if there's any one thing in particular that I think it all goes back to, it's the idea of authority. You know, it's the, and I know that sounds like, oh, authority, you know, but it's, I try not to put that across like authority as in authoritarian, but I take it like authority as in like a place of safety. Okay. And here's what I mean by that. Going through life as someone who's trying to follow Jesus and trying to follow God, there's so many ways to get tripped up. And there's so many different points of view vying for your attention. And it's so easy to go astray and to be led astray, even if you are trying to do the right thing. And you often wonder, how are we supposed to make our way through this? And it almost feels like we're stumbling through the dark. But I think about, you know, Jesus' imagery of you know, he's the good shepherd. And he guides us, he leads us, and he protects us. Now, that shepherd has authority over us, but his authority isn't so much about, I have the authority to tell you what to do. It's more about, I have the authority to take you where you're supposed to be. Now, think about that for a second. That's really what this is all about, isn't it? You know, it's not so much about, I can tell you what to do. Rather, it's about, I'm taking you to where you're supposed to be. And where are we supposed to be? We're supposed to be with him. We're supposed to belong to him. He keeps us in his sheepfold. You know, he keeps us safe and secure by his authority. And as long as we hang with that, then we're going to be safe, you know, not from worldly troubles. Of course, Jesus said, you're going to have trouble in this world, but take heart, I've overcome this world. What I mean by safe is I mean our souls will be safe. We will be safe and secure with him because that authority protects us. So I try to make it come across as it's this layer of protection, not so much like this is the right teaching you must obey, although it is. Because the minute that you depart from that, you open yourself up to all sorts of you know, inclinations and all sorts of potentials and pitfalls to be swayed into all sorts of things that, you know, are probably not going to be right. So if someone is coming to me saying, well, I'm interested in Catholicism, but I don't know if it's true. I never tell them, well, hey, you know, the Catholic Church is great. We got all this great stuff and these awesome programs for your kids. And, you know, we have a great band and our preacher is really funny and he's entertaining. And, you know, all the cool people go to this Catholic Church. You should come there. You know, it ain't about that. I say, come to the church that was started by Christ and that was given authority by Christ and given a promise that he would protect it and keep it from being overcome by the gates of hell.
You know, that's so well said. And that reminds me of something that I have tried to articulate so many times on this podcast and in my life when that comes up in discussion. And maybe you'll agree with this characterization as well. It's the idea that, you know, as a Protestant, I tried so many ways from here till Tuesday to figure out different theological points. I would read my Bible and my friend would read his Bible and we couldn't come to agreement on certain points. So we'd read a whole bunch of different books from different theologians to try and figure out, well, who has the right point? And none of them would agree. And I was often left, you know, trying to wrestle with all kinds of different theological points on baptism and gender and same-sex marriage and salvation and purgatory, the afterlife, hell, heaven, all these different things. And we're left to work it out on our own so often with the Bible and then these theologians that we can find to kind of build that up for us or unpack that for us. But what I found in the Catholic Church, and maybe you found this too, is there's this safety and security in knowing that I don't have to actually unpack all of these tiny yes. and sometimes huge theological points for myself. I can rest in the arms of this 2,000-year-old tradition that Christ promised the authority to, and the fact that it wouldn't be overcome or destroyed. Like, does that resonate with you at all,
that idea? That is exactly how I feel, Keith. And that's what I mean by that safety, because I would get so – like you. I think we have similar stories, you know. I would get just torn up inside wondering what is the truth, you know, because I have a lot of friends in different theological camps. And when you meet different people, you know, you sort of size them up and you're like, okay, well, you know, who do you listen to and what pastors do you follow? And whose teaching, you know, are you into? And do you like this guy? And do you like that guy? And people are sized up according to, you know, who they listen to and who they like. And how do you make your way through all that? And when I became Catholic, I could just sort of breathe and go, I don't have to figure all this out anymore, because I couldn't do it. Now I just have to rest and let the Holy Spirit infuse grace into me through the sacraments so that my life can be about what Jesus wants to do in me and through me, not about trying to like crack the code of what the right theology is and what makes sense and what's clever and what's new and what's, you know, appealing to people. I can just let all that go and just rest. And now for me, I'm so much more peaceful in my faith about that. And that in and of itself is exciting to me, because I never really felt like I was home before. But when I became a Catholic, you know, people would say that to you all the time, welcome home, welcome home. And I know that can sound strange sometimes to people to hear that, because, you know, home is a place where you're used to, you know, you're familiar because you've been. But in Catholicism, home is different. You know, home isn't about where you've been, but it's about where you belong. And I've experienced that even as a new Catholic, just walking in feeling like, okay, I'm home. And nothing beats that feeling. You know, that's what I feel like heaven's ultimately going to be like. It's like, okay, I'm home and I'm safe and I'm where I belong. And I think that's biblical. I think Jesus said, you know, I prepared a place for you, and I go to prepare so that where I am, you may be also. And I'm going to come and bring you to myself. And he's with us, you know, and that's what happens in the Mass. You know, we go to the Mass and we are brought to God, and God is brought to us. And there's nothing like that in the world. It's amazing.
Amen. Amen. Oh,
preach
brother.
It.
Right? I love it. I love it.
Good word.
Hey, oh, that's a good word, man. I've got one more question for you that I'm going to have to let you go. I mean, I could talk to you forever. We're going to have to come back on the show for sure. And here's the question. So, you talk about the struggle in your denomination before you became Catholic. And I got to say, you know, that was an issue for me too. And I can remember bringing that, you know, that the text from Matthew where Jesus talks about you and your brother having a dispute and how you resolve that. And you bring one more brother and then another brother and then bring it to the church. And if you can't settle that, then you're a tax collector or a Gentile, right? It's this idea that there's got to be some kind of authoritative framework for working out disagreements, even within the church.
Yeah.
And you know, and that never made sense to me as a Protestant, because, you know, if I didn't have my view backed up in Church A, well, there was Church B down the street I could go to that would agree with me. And there was no authoritative structure to push back and say, no, you're wrong, this is how it is, because everyone could just kind of do their own thing. And, you know, in one of the things I was trying to unpack before I became Catholic, you know, I was meeting with our pastor and with different friends and unpacking these different things from different theological perspectives. And sad to say, that church that we left had a split over that same issue that I was wrestling with in the end. The church itself couldn't sustain it, and it split. And we were already Catholic at that point. But what could you say to somebody who is in that struggle right now, who is looking at the situation in their church and the evangelical church and maybe their denomination or their group of friends, and just feel like nobody has the answer. There can't be any answer. The system makes no sense and just quits Christianity altogether. What would you say to them about what you've experienced in becoming Catholic?
Yeah, well, first I would tell them I understand how they feel, because it's really hard when you don't have that structure that Christ gave to us. I mean, it's a gift. It's there for a reason. It's not just an optional thing that's sort of like, well, if you need it, here it is. You know, we're all going to need that. And when you don't have it, it causes a lot of strife. So I would tell somebody, yeah, I understand the struggle that you're facing, you know, but let's look together at how this has played itself out, you know, over the history of the church. And, you know, I'm doing a Bible study right now with my wife at my house. We've got, you know, maybe a dozen, 20 somethings coming over to our house on Sunday nights. And we're leading them through a Bible study in the book of Acts. And what's been awesome has been to go through that study and see how the early church dealt with some of these issues. You know, people were wrestling with, well, what do we do with these Gentile believers? Do we make them, you know, become, you know, Jewish before they can become Christians? What do we do? And when you look at how the church dealt with that, and then how they sent out, you know, the apostles to go and to share with everybody, this is what we've decided. This is how this is going to go down. You know, I try to tell people, I'm like, that's still a reality today. That church that sent out Paul and Timothy and Silas and Barnabas and all these guys out into the ends of the earth to say, this is what the Christian church teaches. That church still exists today and is still doing that. And all of your wrestling and, you know, strife with those issues, it really can come to an end if you come underneath that umbrella of that church. And, you know, but I try to do so not in a, like a proud way, but more in like a humble way of saying, yeah, I get where you're at, because it's a tough place to be. Nobody thrives there, Keith. There's nobody that is happy in that place where they're just like, well, it's whatever I want it to be. And, you know, I get to make up the rules. And it just feels weird when you're mad at your church over something, so you can just go down the street to another one and everything's supposed to be hunky-dory, you know? I don't think that that's what Jesus had in mind. So I feel like telling people that that struggle in and of itself is why Christ gave us the church.
Amen. That's fantastic. Hey, it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you, Keith. And not just because we have the same name, but because you just have such a great story. And I truly think that listeners are going to hear a lot more from you in the future. You're going to become somebody they absolutely have to watch. So where can they find out more about you?
Well, like I said before, this is all kind of new to me, but I have a website now. It's just www.keithnester.com, and it's just KEITHNESTER.com. My YouTube channel is just Keith Nester. I have a Facebook page called Keith Nester Catholic Speaker, and an Instagram called Keith Nester Catholic. So I have a lot of those things, but, you know, mainly I would drive people to the website and then to the YouTube page.
Fantastic. And they will not be disappointed checking out that website and your YouTube videos. They're a hot commodity right now, and as they should be. I think God is, as I said, absolutely anointing your ministry right now, man. And it's been so good to have you in the podcast. Thank you so much. God bless you. God bless your work for the church, and God bless your family.
Thank you so much, Keith. I really appreciate you having me on and taking time to listen.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Cordial Catholic. Check out Keith Nester's stuff at keithnester.com. He's on Facebook and YouTube as well. Look him up, you will not be disappointed. As you can tell from our conversation, he is a fantastic evangelist, a wonderful speaker, and has an incredible story to tell. Check him out, you will not be disappointed. We're at thecordialcatholic.com for show notes and all the latest blog articles I've been writing. They're fantastic, I think, and worth your time. Check those out, please. Email cordialcatholic@gmail.com. Any feedback is good feedback and helps push this show to new boundaries and helps me to continue to improve what I'm doing here. I'm at Cordial Catholic on Twitter, The Cordial Catholic on Facebook as well. Please follow or subscribe to this podcast wherever you find it, and please, please, please leave ratings and reviews if you can. Those help push the show out to new people and to grow our audience. Guys, I love this work. I feel it is a calling from God on my life, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. But it's not my full-time job, and any financial support you can throw my way goes a long way. $8 or more a month, as you heard, gets you a copy of Jimmy Akin's new book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. Jimmy joins us on the show in a couple of weeks, and I think this is his most fantastic, his best book ever, and I can give you a copy for $8 or more a month. Go to patreon.com/cordialcatholic for more information on how to do that. And thank you so much for all my supporters and anyone even considering it. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week, guys. Thanks for listening, and God bless.
Hello, this is Steve Ray from CatholicConvert.com, and I'm leaving this message for the Cordial Catholic because I hear today you have a young man named Keith Nestor on your podcast, and I just want to welcome him into the Catholic Church. We need good guys, dynamic speakers like Keith. I did get a chance to hear a bit of one of his YouTube talks this afternoon, and it sounds like this guy's on his way to sharing the story of the truth of the Catholic faith with a lot of others. Keep up the good work, Keith. God bless you. And also for the Cordial Catholic, you keep up the good work too. This is Steve Ray from CatholicConvert.com. God bless you all.
This show is brought to you in a special way by our co-producer patrons over at patreon.com/cordialcatholic. A special thanks to Ellie and Tom, Kelvin and Susan, Stephen, Suzanne and Victor, Phil, Noah, Nicole, Michelle, Jordan, John, James, Gina, and Aram for your special support at the co-producer tier and making this thing possible. You guys are fantastic. God bless and thanks for your support.